Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase Studio on a very quiet Michigan Avenue. We are always here. And we've got, I know, it's 7 o'clock. The show's supposed to start at 6. Daylight saving time messed us up. We are an hour late. What can I do? Cody, I didn't set my clock. You know that. I tell you to always send me an alarm when there's a time change because space travel and time travel baffle me, and I always get confused. So we're an hour late. Actually, we're not an hour late. You know, we've been listening to the Northwestern basketball team. The Wildcats finally getting into the NCAA tournament. So congratulations to the Wildcats. They will play on Thursday in Salt Lake City. So we are happy for them. That's why we are starting late, because we needed to take part in all those festivities. But we are going to jam the full 3 hours of show into 2 hours. So just get ready. I'm going to be talking very fast. If you want to get involved and I take a breath, well, you can try. 312-981-7200. That is the phone and the text number. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I can't believe I overslept too, Goff. He is the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. You can also keep in touch with us via social media, Facebook and Twitter. It's the Brian Noonan Show. So there you go. I'm sure I was not the only one who overslept today. Because daylight saving, and don't say daylight savings, it makes you sound stupid. It's daylight saving time. Of course, we had to set the clocks at. I got home very late last night, uncharacteristically late for me. We were out at the Irish American Heritage Center getting our Irish on, as I am wont to do, before St. Patrick's Day. Got done with the Big Tony and Tina show. Because, as you know, Cody, I'm a thespian. Big, big professional thespian.
You are.
And so a shot up there. Got home late and had the presence of mind to remember to set most of the clocks ahead. So I set a lot of the clocks ahead. But then, you know, just like everybody, I'm not alone in this. You get in the car and you're like, oh, I got to set that. You got to figure out now how to set the clock in your car, which this car, pretty easy. My old car, I had to take like a paper clip and straighten it out and poke the paper clip in a tiny hole, and that would activate some mechanism. And then I'd have to do all this crazy computer programming to get the time changed in the car. Then I've got this watch that I thought was automatically going to shift time for me for daylight saving time. I must not have had that setting correct. Well, I've had this watch for many years because, you know, I'm very cheap, and if something continues to work, why upgrade it? So I had to go online to find the owner's manual for this probably 7-year-old model of Casio G-Shock watch so that I could then pull up the owner's manual to figure out how to manually set the time on this. Which took me about 25 minutes, because I'm an idiot. I know how to read, so I could read the manual, but it was just a very complicated process.
Did you do this in the car?
No, this I was doing at home.
So it wasn't because you were in the car reading in the garage and you had accidentally forgotten to open the door?
No, that happens all the time, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen all the time, but I'm paranoid about it. That I wait, when I turn off the car, I don't immediately then put the garage door down. I wait for, like, whatever is left of the carbon monoxide to get out of there, for the air to circulate through. And rationally, I know that once the car's off, it's stopped emitting those noxious fumes. I could shut the door, and it's not like my garage is airtight. I don't park my car in Tupperware, and then somebody comes and burps it once I get out. It's a drafty old garage, but there's still that part of me that's like, if I'm going to die, I don't want it to look like I screwed up and just left the car running, or that was how I decided to go out. Because if I do go out, I want it to be in some sort of heroic fashion. I don't want to be, oh, he was checking his texts and he closed the garage door and he died because he got into some weird Facebook messaging thread with someone. I don't want that to happen. And you know how easily I'm lured down the rabbit hole of social media. So there's a good chance that I could asphyxiate myself sitting in the garage. Horrifying. But everybody's thrown off for daylight saving time. There's research. I know you probably had some incidents today yourself. There has been a lot of research saying that daylight saving time, one, it's stupid, and two, it's actually bad for you. The argument's been shaky for a while. Dozens of studies around the world have found that changing clocks has either minuscule or non-existent effects on energy use, which was the big thing. Oh, we're going to put daylight saving time into effect. People are going to cut out using energy. No. When Indiana finally implemented daylight saving time in 2006, they actually used more electricity because Indiana just doesn't get it. They're like, oh, daylight saving. We are going to crank up all our electrical appliances because now we can see them better. So they just started using them earlier. It's a benign relic of the 70s energy crisis. The latest research suggests that time change can be harmful to our health and cost us money. Well, then why not keep doing it? If it's bad for us on all... We, as Americans lately, we seem to do a lot of things that are bad for us. So why not just keep doing daylight saving time as well? The effects are most disruptive in the spring and fall, right after these two time changes. The suffering of the springtime change begins with the loss of an hour of sleep. You seem a little drowsy today, Cody. Is that the results of daylight saving time?
Could have something to do with it.
Could have something to do with it. Or you always just look drowsy when you're in here. I don't know. It's dangerous to mess with sleep schedules. Car accidents, strokes, and heart attacks spike in the days after the March time change. Wow. Right there. I read those three things, car accidents, strokes, and heart attacks, and I think, well, if they're going up, then by all means, let's keep doing that. Turns out the judges, if you have court tomorrow, you're in trouble. If you're going before the judge tomorrow, judges who are sleep deprived because of daylight saving impose harsher sentences. So imagine you're going to traffic court tomorrow and you think, well, I'll get out of this. No problem. You're going to end up like 60 days in county just because your judge is a little drowsy. We'll ask Karen about that. We'll see if that holds true, or if this could in fact, Cody, be fake news. There could be fake news. You know, I love to be a guy who spreads more fake news, especially about important topics like daylight saving time. Even mild changes in sleep patterns can affect human capital in significant ways, according to Cornell University researchers. Some of the last defenders of daylight saving time. I didn't know we needed defenders of daylight saving time. I wonder if they're in a cabal. Some big superhero cabal that defends daylight saving time.
It's the watchmaker lobby.
Is it the watchman or is it the watchman?
Ooh.
Who's watching the watchman watching the watchmakers?
Nobody. They don't know what time it is.
Exactly, because they're all out. Well, the watchmakers you would think would want things to stay, you know, pretty consistent.
No, but people try to reset their clocks and then they mess them up and then they got to go to the watchmakers and the watch fixers and the...
Are there still watch fixers, you think? Or watch repairmen, as we like to call them in a grammatically correct sentence?
Somewhere.
Hey, you watch fixer. I got a Tom piece I'd like you to tinker with a little bit. I think most people, unless you have a very expensive watch, I guess there's watch repair at the mall in those little kiosks.
I mean, most people don't have watches.
See, this is where I disagree with you. I think a lot of people still wear watches. I know your age group does not, and I find it a little off because I sometimes will think to myself, well, why do I need a watch? Because I have a clock right on my phone, which is in my pocket. But the days I don't wear a watch, I feel like something is missing. Like a part of me, an integral part of my persona is not there. As if one of my appendages were somehow missing. You know what I mean? It's part of getting dressed in the morning. I have different watches for different occasions. I have I have a very practical watch that I'm wearing now. I have some more frivolous watches. I have a nice dress watch that I have. So I think having a watch is critical.
Millennials have iPhones on their watch.
Yeah, if you... Please.
I need an app on my wrist, Brian.
Why do you need an app on your wrist? Why do you need to check your Tinder while you're seeing what time it is? You don't need any.
Do they have Tinder on iWatch?
I don't know. Isn't it an app?
Yeah, but...
You're the one who said you had apps on your phone. I don't know. I don't have an iWatch.
Tinder on iWatch. No. There's a hands-free heart rate-powered Tinder app. I don't know. It'd be depressing either way.
Everything is depressing these days. Anyway, people are defending daylight
saving time. Because it's darker because of the time.
No, it's actually going to stay later now.
Oh, that's true.
It's going to stay lighter now, later. Listen, it's 7, I don't know, 18, 19, 7, 18, and it's still kind of light outside.
Then it was successful. The daylight has been saved.
Yay! So we could stop defending it. That's not true. It's not stimulating. This is what they're saying. The defenders are saying it stimulates consumer spending. Because people will stop at the store more on their way home because it's light and they'll spend all kinds of money. And they're wrong. They're lying. Fake news. This is real fake news. It's a lie. The defenders of daylight saving time are propagating more fake news. A study was conducted and it compared Los Angeles and Phoenix in the 30 days after March and November time changes. Arizona is a natural test case because they don't do daylight saving time along with Hawaii. in the spring. According to the consumer transaction data, an additional hour of evening in daylight in Los Angeles managed to slightly boost card spending per person compared with that in Phoenix, although less than 1%. So, daylight turns out to be a surprisingly large factor in how often workers stop at stores on their way home from their jobs in the evening. At the end of the day, it's either dark or light, and people are going to make an impulse decision at that point to stop. So a lot of states are trying to outlaw, get rid of daylight saving. They're, I don't know. It doesn't look like it's going to happen, as many of these states are coming up with bills and proposals to try to get daylight saving dropped, but does not look likely. In search of bills pending in the Congress this year and last year, none mentioned daylight saving time. So it's all part of the deal. All right, let's do a quick break. We'll get to your... Oh, you say I can't hear you. I don't know what you're flailing about like a spaz.
I said we have a quick call.
A quick call. All right, we'll take the quick call. It's Craig. He's on the road. Hi, Craig.
How are you? I just thought I might comment. I'm in the jewelry business. Oldest family-owned jeweler in Chicago. I believe your younger talent said most people don't have watches. Did I hear that correctly?
That's what he said. He said most people don't wear watches. I shot down that theory immediately. I think he's
wrong. I believe he's wrong, and I'd just like to add something. When I want to know what time it is, I don't want to have to reach in my pocket, reach in my my coat pocket to look on my friggin' phone.
I understand.
I wear a watch every day.
I do too, Craig, and I'm with you. I think people who don't wear watches are irresponsible and they're a drain on the economy.
I wouldn't tell you that, but I just think most people do wear watches.
Listen, we're going to do an informal survey. Craig, I appreciate the opinion. Thank you very much. Let's do this. We'll see. We'll start asking people as they walk by if they wear a watch. We'll turn this into a whole big Facebook poll. Cody, we could set that up. I don't know how we do it, but I'm sure we can. We'll figure it all out and then come back to you on WGN. Yesterday, I saw a lot of people, oh my goodness, hammered already. It was very early. They were drunk. They were wandering about. And, if you are one of them and today you are feeling a little bit sluggish, or you're preparing for next Saturday morning when you'll wake up and be filled with regret for the bad decisions you made on St. Patrick's Day, and please, if you're going to make bad decisions, stay home and make your bad decisions. Don't make your bad decisions wandering about. So people will always try to figure out what they should do for their hangover, what they used to. I know when I used to drink, to the point where I would be hungover, it was always Pepsi. I would drink a lot of Pepsi and then usually some greasy food. That seems to be what yes, Pepsi. What are you looking at me like that for? That now you choose to pay attention while you're bemoaning people not wearing watches?
Because Pepsi's carbonated and there's a Twitter poll on your Twitter page.
Is there?
Yeah.
About what?
About watches.
Oh, about watches? People wear watches? All right, so go to Brian Noonan Show on Twitter. You can get involved in the poll. Cody was putting that together.
I was doing something.
That was nice.
You know, not
Just not warning me that the break was over.
Right.
That's all right. I should pay attention myself. Wait, you don't drink carbonated beverages for a hangover?
No.
What do you mean, no?
For a hangover, you drink a lot of water.
Well, you should drink a lot of water before you go to bed. Then you're supposedly not going to get hungover.
Well, you should drink a lot of water while you drink.
No, I needed the sugar and the caffeine and the bubbles to get me back righted with the world.
That never did it for me.
That always did it for me and some a lot of big greasy food.
Yeah, big greasy burger. Food, yeah. Big greasy food and a coffee. But
well, last year, because there's always numbers, people are always looking up statistics or trying to figure out trends. Grubhub was, people looked at the Grubhub orders last year after St. Patrick's Day, the morning after St. Patrick's Day, to try to figure out what people were eating when they were hungover. What do you think made the biggest leap for hangover food orders? Take a minute and think about it. What do you think would be the biggest food item ordered for hangovers? Macaroni and cheese. Sorry, orders that I would never, I don't like macaroni and cheese normally, but orders of macaroni and cheese skyrocketed the most, up 231% in orders in the hours following following St. Patrick's Day. Hash browns rose 214. So people are carbo loading to kill their hangover, which seems odd to me. Again, I guess if greasy food has a lot of carbs. So macaroni and cheese, hash browns rose 214%. Reuben sandwiches increased by 213%. Yeah, I could see that. If I'm hungover, a nice Reuben. One Reuben. Biscuits and gravy were up 141%. Potato pancakes up 138%. So there you go. That's what people are eating to cure their hangovers here in Chicago, according to Grubhub. Macaroni and cheese, hash browns, Reuben sandwiches, and biscuits and gravy. And potato pancakes. It does not sound like the kind of food that is going to be good for you, but if it soaks up the residual alcohol in your system, that would be fine. All right, on the other side of the news, we have not done this in quite some time, basically because we have not been here in quite some time. To some people's glee, to other people's chagrin. But Roger will have real news, and then we'll have, that's right, Florida news. All right, I wanted to, before we get into Florida news, I saw this story, and it got me for a while. Because anybody who has kids, if you sat in line at pickup or drop-off at schools, you know what a nightmare it is. And I don't want to turn this into a gun issue, but it kind of is a gun issue. A little bit. No, we're not going to talk gun control. I'm just how irresponsible some gun owners, not all gun owners, some gun owners are irresponsible. Just like some dog owners are irresponsible. Just like some people who drink are irresponsible. There are certain segments of everybody that, this comes out of Texas, all right, where it is illegal to carry guns on this particular school's campus. However, this is a great moment in bad parenting. So, these people are in line, they're trying to drop their kids off in the morning. One mom decides she's a little upset with another mom, so she gets out while her kids are still in the car and the other mom's kids are still in the car and pulls a gun on her in the line in front of the school because of some altercation that happened in traffic where the gun-pulling mom thought the other mom was driving a little too fast and decided, you know what the best way is to solve this? To whip out a gun right in the school driveway. People are stupid. This is all according to the school officials and the police. Kids were still inside both vehicles. No one was injured. Thank goodness the weapon was not fired. But according to one neighbor, said it breaks my heart because they are so impressionable at this point. When is this going to do for them? What is this going to do for them? I did proofread it because I highlighted it, but maybe this is what the person said in the interview. Anyway, when they have a conflict, is the first resolution they're going to think of is I'll pull a gun and or brandish a gun, and that's not good. Another witness said people should be watching what they say in front of their children. Can you imagine a child seeing this? It goes to a broader question about what people will do in front of their kids and think that the kids aren't paying any attention to it. I don't think we need to argue who thinks it's a good idea to pull out a gun in the school drop-off line. I'm going to guess a very small percentage of us would think that that's a good idea, or even an idea that should be considered. Not that you would then not discount it and say, you know what, it was a bad idea, but the fact that you thought about it in the first place is a little ridiculous. But we've all seen parents, and I'll be honest, I was guilty of this kind of thing, not pulling a gun in the school drop-off line, but swearing in front of my daughter, which some of my friends are, they're still incredulous that ever happened. You swore in front of your daughter when she was young? I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm not proud of it, but that's, one, that's how I talk, which is not a good excuse, but two, when I would get upset in the car or something. So I see that, but we forget. We think our kids are so young that they're not going to remember or they're not going to pick up on this kind of stuff. But these are exactly the kind of things that they remember and exactly the kind of things that then they will repeat because, well, if mom or dad can do this. So, again, the police were called to the scene. They didn't make any arrests. How do you not make any arrests? Because you're lazy. That's how you don't make any arrests, Deer Park, Texas police. How do you not make, I called them out, Cody. I called out the entire Deer Park, Texas Police Department.
Yeah, you really did.
I did. Because, how do you not arrest somebody for pulling a gun in the school drop-off line?
Because what, there is a term for that. I don't remember.
Brandishing a firearm?
But I thought there was some other term, but
well,
yeah,
it's
sure.
Illegal to have the gun on the school campus, number one.
True.
Arrestable offense. You pull a gun with no probable cause unless your life is in danger. You know, you're threatening someone with a gun. That's got to be an arrestable offense.
Yeah, there's
you can't just go around whipping out a gun whenever you want.
There's nothing between honk your horn and pull a gun. That seems like a bit, you know, like...
Here, you know what? You know what goes in between honking your horn and pulling a gun? Flip somebody off?
Mm-hmm.
Yell something at them? Make horrible comments, obscene gestures, all those things. Throw a rock at the car.
Key their car.
Yeah, wait, stalk them, hunt them down, put them in a burlap sack and keep them in the trunk of your car for a while.
That might be a little past the gun one.
Is it?
I think.
If the kids aren't in the car?
Oh, then that's fine.
All right, if it's just adults?
It's
not two consenting adults, but it's two adults.
It does horrify me the kids are in the car.
Exactly. So now the kids have not only been traumatized, because it's bad enough if you're the kids of the gun-wielding lunatic. But if you're the kids of the other mother, and who knows what was going on in that car, because we've all been in road rage incidents. Well, you know, not to this extent, hopefully. But we've all been in those incidents, so you don't know if the kids who are in with the mother who had the gun pointed at her, what she was saying or doing, or if she was driving crazy erratic, which is still absolutely no excuse for this. But now you've got two sets of kids who are traumatized for all different reasons because their moms were idiots. I don't know. I'm not telling you how to parent, but I am telling you how to parent. Don't be an idiot. Come on. Use your head. And again, we all make mistakes, but it's where do you draw the line? Goodness. All right. I had to get that because I can't, but sometimes Cody, I've been doing this a long time. You've been with me a long time. We've read a lot of stories about people doing really stupid things. And usually we will laugh at them. I couldn't laugh at that one. That one was just, for some reason, that really got me. Because, God forbid, it had gone on a little bit further. Something happens, that gun goes off, right into the car, right into one of those kids. What are you thinking?
One of the worst things.
Could be one of the worst. We've covered, as I said, a lot of stories. A lot of them have been bad. So you're putting this could be one of the worst?
No, just that, I mean, that's one of the worst. Many of the outcomes.
Yes. What do you hope to achieve by doing that? I was going to say, what did you think would happen? They don't think what's going to happen. They just react because they're like, they have a lizard brain. There's no complicated mental processes going on there. There's anger, gun. That's how it is.
You've talked about this on our web-exclusive podcast.
I did?
On WGNRadio.com.
What did I talk about?
You talked about how you're glad that you don't have a gun because, and how a lot of people, we had a road rage episode.
Oh, right, yes, road rage episode.
And you talked about how, I'm glad I didn't have a gun because I was so mad I would have pulled it out, and you wouldn't have pulled it out. But you know what I mean?
I hope I would not have, but yes.
There's the idea that if you've got a gun and you get really, really upset and you're not thinking and you pull that out, things can happen that you really can't take back. And people just shouldn't have guns, for instance, if they anticipate that they'll be in a situation where they'll get so upset that all logic totally leaves.
That's giving them the benefit of the doubt that there was some logic to begin with.
But the thing is, I feel like almost everybody has moments.
Oh, sure we do. Everybody gets to a point where you're blinded by rage. We've heard that expression. Most of us have had them. Most of us, thankfully, can work through them without doing something horrible. But, you know, how many holes are in walls of people who are listening because that just initial reaction, you just, boom, you probably never have. You ever punched a wall?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. See, so you know. You've been there.
It hurts.
It hurts a lot. And then it hurts a lot physically. And then it hurts a lot financially when you have to try to fix that hole in the wall. Because, you know, you can't live with you cannot live with the constant reminder that you were not able to control your temper and you punched a wall. You know, oh, what's that hole from? You throwing baseballs? Besides a baseball, what else makes a fist-sized hole in a wall? Nothing. A head's too big. If I put your head through a wall, the hole's going to be much bigger.
Have you ever thrown your phone?
No, but one time, and I may have told this story, karma slapped me back in the face. I was in high school, and I was having an argument with my dad. And I was outside, and he was saying, and I got so mad, I had a baseball bat in my hand, and I threw it down. But instead of it landing flat, it landed on the end, and it bounced off the driveway and hit me right in the mouth. And boom, my lip just exploded.
Are you serious?
Honest to God. I was arguing with him, and I was so frustrated, I just threw the bat down, figured we had been playing, it wasn't like I had a bat going at him. I had been playing baseball. The bat was there for a sport reason. It wasn't like my dad and I had been arguing with bats. It wasn't American Gladiator. It wasn't a prison movie where I had taped phone books to myself so I couldn't get stabbed. We were just all of a sudden, and I threw it, and like a missile, it shot right back, boom! Hit me right in the mouth. The only thing that kept me from losing my teeth is I had braces at the time. Because it hit so hard, bam, the braces hit my lip, the bat hit my lip, just exploded.
And the only reason that worked logistically is because you're so tall, right?
I believe so. And I don't know, maybe I should have thrown javelin in high school. Because I obviously had some force behind my toss.
Wow.
For lack of a better term. I don't know.
I've never thrown my phone. The one thing I've come really close. The one thing I'll never throw is a controller. Video game controller.
Because once those break, they're gone.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's like a...
why won't that... Well, that's part of... That's like throwing your hand. You are so connected to those video game controllers, it would be like, as they say, cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
You could never destroy that. You would rather pick something else up and throw it. I throw stuff. All that rage stopped for me, you know, once I started drinking. That kind of calmed everything down. It quieted the voices, made me much more mellow. Because you know how mellow I am. I'm probably one of the most easygoing guys you've ever met.
Yep, all those things. I agree.
Say it, Cody. Tell him I'm easygoing.
Of course, Brian. Of course.
Thank
Send
you.
Help.
Oh, speaking of sending help.
Rejected state songs.
Oh, I hit it twice. I must have hit it twice.
Rejected state songs.
Come to Florida and die.
All the good stories come from Florida. It's America's trailer park. You know that.
Woo! Uh-oh. Brian sees some blips on his Floridar. Get ready to go from classy to trashy. This is Florida News.
Woo!
There's still the booking bounty if you ever get Ric Flair on this program. You get a little reward. You know, we want the Nature Boy to come in and do the Florida Open live. You got a lot of company in there tonight. A very crowded booth for you tonight.
Yeah, it's a producer convention.
Oh, man, oh, man.
Decided to hold it during your show because I wasn't going to listen anyway.
Because they probably figured it wasn't going to be on. Let's do it sometime on Sunday nights. He's never on. He's never there. There's always something else is running. The station's still on the air, it's just that he's never there.
Do you want some of the fondue from in here? We got a fountain.
You got a fondue fountain?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No. Fondue. Fondue doesn't come out of a fountain. Fondue is a boiling oil that you dip stuff into, or like chocolate, melted chocolate. Do you have a chocolate fountain in there?
We have one of those coming in later.
A chocolate fountain coming in later?
Mm-hmm.
How much later?
A couple hours. Right. You might miss it, so I guess you fondon't. The look you gave me... Most people would just walk out and never come back.
Well, that was my goal. A Florida man was arrested after being found naked in a Stellar Transportation work van with a fire extinguisher. And that is not a euphemism. Police responded to a call at a Vero Beach Bank of America on Tuesday, and the naked man jumped out of the van. This is a great combination of Florida news and naked news, all in one beautiful story. Naked man jumped out of the van and started yelling, according to the Sebastian Daily, which is not a newspaper, just a guy named Sebastian who walks around giving people reports throughout Florida. Oh, here comes Sebastian. What's going on today, Sebastian? Well, there was a guy, and he was naked in a van, and he jumped out and he had a fire extinguisher. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. And then he wanders off into the sunset like Kung Fu. Clayton Corsi is 65. He told police he worked for Stellar Transportation, and he had permission to use the van. The owner of the company told officers, surprise, Courtney did not have permission. It's not Corsi's first time allegedly stealing a form of transportation, Cody. In January, he took a motorized shopping cart from Publix before crashing it at a medical center. I've seen those motorized carts at the grocery store. They don't go that fast that you would lose control. I tell you, I got it up to 3, and I just couldn't handle it. It was the G-force threw me right over the basket. I crashed it. I had to crash it to save my own life. It was insanity. He's charged with felony burglary of an auto. Oh, my goodness. We love Florida news. It's been so long. A Cape Coral man told police he was delivering drugs to friends in Key West in exchange for a free vacation before being pulled over for speeding in Marathon on Tuesday. Tyler Doige was stopped just before 8 p.m. He was going almost twice the speed limit near mile marker 48. I give you these precise details so that you will know exactly how to picture this in your mind. This is according to the arrest report from Monroe County Sheriff's Office Deputy Matthew Corey. Deutsch told Corey he was aware of warning signs that the 35-mile-per-hour limit is strictly enforced in that area and was on his way to Key West for vacation. That sounds lovely. After Corey smelled marijuana and told Deutsch he was going to search the 2008 Buick LaCrosse, he noted in the report that Deutsch began to develop beads of sweat on his forehead. Well, first of all, if you're going to be transporting drugs, don't go over the limit. How many times have I told you this, Cody? Don't drive over the limit if you're transporting drugs.
Now I know why.
Because you get pulled over. Then this guy starts to sweat, which is a telltale. I'm not a law enforcement officer. I don't pretend to be. I don't have any sort of training. But I've seen enough bad cop shows on TV to know if a perp starts to sweat, that's a good indicator that they've done something hinky. Do you like how I threw all those bad police show terms in there? This is not normal behavior since the outside temperature was near 75 degrees, according to the officer. I have a protective vest and long pants on, and I was not sweating. Well, maybe you're cold-blooded. We don't know. Doige was wearing a tank top and shorts. On the same evening, I conducted three other traffic stops, and none of those drivers appeared to be sweating. Man, when your overactive sweat glands get you busted, that's time for a new deodorant. Corey wrote he found a backpack with 84.5 grams of marijuana in plastic bags. Underneath the divider between the trunk bottom and the spare tire was a glass jar inside of which were 318 ecstasy pills with smiley faces stamped on both sides. Deutsch said his friends forgot the drugs on the mainland. Oops. And in exchange for the delivery, they'd pay for his entire trip. He also told the officer that he'd smoked some of the marijuana before the drive. Oh, boy. Not good. All right. Another bad story. All right, now we've already had one driving story. I'm going to give you a choice, Cody. I have a story about a Florida maid of honor. I have a story about a drunk man stealing something. And then I actually have a roundup of everything that our good friend, a Florida man, has been doing in the last few weeks.
Since I'm on the wedding circuit,
yes,
we'll go with the maid of honor. But the third one, I think, is a close second.
Well, we may have time to do a few of the Florida man things. A Florida couple's wedding reception was recently ruined when the maid of honor went on a drunken rampage. Maybe you rethink that open bar for the wedding. Because you know what the thing is? Those bridal party people, they don't eat. They don't eat beforehand because, one, they're nervous. Two, they want to fit in this dress. So they're working really hard to stay svelte. Then a lot's going on, especially for the maid of honor. She's buttoning up the train of the bride's gown. She's doing all these things. She starts drinking. Man, the wedding pictures tell the story of a content couple, Brian and Jennifer Butler. They had their cake and first dance while maid of honor Amanda Willis started drinking. I'm always the maid of honor. When am I going to get a groom? She was a mess. She drank almost an entire bottle of Fireball, said one guest. An entire bottle of Fireball at the wedding. She was drunk within 20 minutes to a half hour, said the bride. Willis started asking people for their keys. She just went up to the best man and grabbed his keys out of his pocket and jumped in his car. Willis backed out and almost hit the best man, Brian's brother. He grabbed onto the car and held on. Well, that's stupid. This is not TJ Hooker. You don't grab onto the car and hope that they'll pull you along to safety. She took off and his feet were dragging across the ground. He had to hit the e-brake. So they wrestled her out of the car. Then she went back inside. She grabbed a big bottle of Captain Morgan and just guzzled it. Wow. This young lady was having some emotional distress, it sounds like.
She was not a lady.
Well, I picked a calmer term, a more sensitive term, so as not to offend. Her behavior is offensive, but I didn't want my terminology about her to be offensive.
This young woman.
This young woman.
She's not a lady.
Wow.
She's not a high-class lady.
Well, no, she's not a high-class lady. She's a drunken dame. She's a dirty, dirty monkey. After she guzzled the Captain Morgan, surprisingly, then she got violent. deputies. So the deputies came. Are you picturing this at your wedding? Do you already know who the maid of honor is going to be?
I've been thrown into the back of a cop car at a wedding.
No.
Yeah.
Really? For what?
Making out with the wrong person. Doesn't matter.
The cop? Who are you making out with? The police dog? How did it get so far that you were put in the hoosegow?
It's a story for another time.
Wow.
Doesn't matter.
Were you booked?
Wait.
Were you booked?
No.
Were you hit with a hose?
No.
Really?
Yeah. There's some stories. What? People got to check out our web-exclusive podcast. I'll tell you next time.
Yeah, that's good. How did that... Well, all right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we got a break in like 30 seconds.
Well, all right. Well, deputies said that Willis claimed to be having an asthma attack and started shaking as if she were having a seizure. They took her to Bayfront Punta Gorda, which sounds like a lovely spot. It's probably a mental hospital. Well, there she exposed herself to the deputies, assaulted two medics, and kicked over her bedpan. Man... She's got to go from maid of honor to bride pretty soon. She is a catch, this one. The arrest is Willis's ninth in Charlotte County. She faces charges of larceny, battery, grand theft of a motor vehicle, and violation of probation. There you go, Cody. Something to look forward to. All right, we'll do this. Then after 8, Karen will be here, so start getting your legal questions in now at 312-981-7200. Karen Conti is here joining me to answer your legal questions. 312-981-7200 is how you get those questions answered. Don't wait too long, because when you do, then you're out of luck. Things go horribly awry, and you're without legal counsel for the week. Welcome. How are you? You look great.
I'm all dressed in black.
I'm doing well, as she hacks up a lung. Oh, I'm fine, other than the emphysema and the big goiter. I'm doing great.
I am doing great.
Good. You feel
I haven't been wiretapped. I haven't been fired
Listen,
from my job.
Not yet. Well, you're not a U.S. attorney.
I'm not a U.S. attorney.
You're a private attorney.
And that's
which
one
makes...
good thing about being on your own. No one can fire you.
Well, let's start with that, because that's a huge story. And, you know, of course, the news made it seem like this was something wildly out of character, that 46 U.S. attorneys were asked to resign by the president. Turns out that happens every time a new administration comes in, correct?
Yeah, it does. And the president has an absolute right. Just like when a new corporate president comes in, that person can fire the top, you know, people in the different departments to get his own person in there.
Right.
And that has happened with every single president.
Sure.
I think the way it was done, though, was probably objectionable. And here's why. A lot of people don't know. The U.S. Attorney's Office is our federal, you know, in this area in Chicago, our federal prosecutor investigates... along with the FBI, mm-hmm. all of the really bad crimes, the terrorist stuff, the very bad gang crimes and the drug crimes and the gun crimes and the fraud crimes to Social Security. These are very important things. We
right.
have our state's attorney, which does the local stuff,
sure.
and the federal does the federal stuff, which tends to be the really big, important stuff. So if you yank someone out of that job, like, for instance, our U.S. attorney manages 300 employees.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big operation.
Right.
You are an administrator. So to yank the head person out of all of these offices in the middle of their investigations, in the middle of their prosecutions, without having anyone lined up or even a plan on how this is going to go, can cause havoc, because
right.
ultimately Trump's going to appoint people in all these positions, but they still have to be confirmed by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of better to have someone lined up before you start firing people all at once.
Well, the reports, the former presidents, it's been like within the first year that this is, you know, that they start dismissing
yeah.
the former U.S. attorneys. And all the reports seem to be echoing what you say. It was the abruptness of this. The one that seems to be getting the most attention, that was the most surprising, is the U.S. attorney in Manhattan. Because he said he wasn't going to resign. They would have to be fired. He also said that he met with President Trump and was asked to stay on. So he was, as much as everybody else was blindsided, he seemed to be blindsided even more. And so today they did actually fire him.
Yeah, and the one thing that he can't do, Trump cannot do, is to fire U.S. attorneys for political reasons.
Right.
And interestingly, George W. Bush got into some trouble with that, because he fired some U.S. attorneys, and they were thinking perhaps it was because they were prosecuting Republicans, maybe not prosecuting some mm-hmm. Democrats. Nothing was ever proven, but they did a 2-year investigation, and they said that it was probably political, but they weren't going to punish anybody for that. So the question here,
and this one looks a little bit like that, because he went after the banks.
Well, that's right, but there's also, I believe there's a senator who's really good friends mm-hmm. with this U.S. attorney, and now the senator, who's a Democrat, who used to be friendly with Trump, now is not so much friendly right. because he's going against Trump's policies. And there's a thought that this is payback. Now, we don't know that, and that's all just speculation. But again, the abruptness of these things, you know, again, just this is a current throughout the administration mm-hmm. that things are just happening really fast without, to me, seeming like there's a lot of thought behind it. Like the first immigration law, like, did you think about when you wrote this one, maybe in instead of just moving and making a big splash in the news, you think about what it means to all these people who are right. underneath the U.S. attorney, all these prosecutions, all the, you know, and there's going to be a transition that's going to be very awkward and very, you know, they're going to lose traction on right. some of these really important issues.
And, of course, the Department of Justice is saying everything's going to be fine. We're going to be able to proceed as necessary. But I think your point is valid. There was no rush. We know the president has the right to do this. This is their thing. But don't be so impetuous. It you can wait a minute, you know. Get one guy confirmed, then move them into their office and so on. But
clearly,
that's not how it happens.
And you know, I think a lot of people quit too because they didn't want to be under Trump. I get it. They knew the wind was blowing that way.
Right.
But yeah, it just seemed like the wrong thing to do. And then sending a message again of kind of wreaking havoc, like everything's sort of up in the air. And mm-hmm. and I when you have an administration, I mean, interestingly, it doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican. I've never felt like there was a transitional, chaotic period here. I feel like it's like no one's manning the boat and the boat just left and nobody's there manning it, you know? So, you know, and I think that makes people feel uncomfortable and certainly again, because of the very important nature of what they do, it's gonna affect some people.
312-981-7200. I always chastise people, as you know, for waiting too long to call. Now, Kathy called right during the news, so I want to reward Kathy by getting to her right away, because
okay.
why tell people to call early and then make them sit around on hold forever? So, hi, Kathy. Welcome, and thank you for following directions.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Hi, Brian. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Kathy.
I just have a question about a condo. I live in a condo, an 8-unit condo, and two of the units, including mine, have not had heat since February 24th.
Wow.
I wanted to know if I had the right to withhold any would call association dues, and if so, how much would I calculate?
Yeah, so I'm just curious, what have you done? Just gotten space heaters, or?
Somebody was generous enough to give me a space heater, and I'm using the oven. Unfortunately,
wow.
Yeah, it's radiant heat.
Okay, why are they not fixing this more promptly?
Well, they say because they don't have enough money. They say that we should be responsible. I said, no, this is the association's responsibility.
Well, but if they don't have enough money, then what they usually do is they, you know, they come up with some assessments that everyone has to pay in order to pay for this.
So I agree. And they are holding out for, the cheapest offer. They're not offering the cheapest way to go with this. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. So, yes, having all this time without heat is really kind of it's hard.
I can't even imagine. I'd have to read your bylaws, and I'd have to read, and that's something that you should pull out at this point in time to see what the bylaws say about things like this. I can't give you a specific answer without having read that. My guess is that you should probably withhold. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to come after you and sue you? They can't even get the heat on in 3 weeks, let alone get a lawsuit together. So I think you have every right to do that. And, you know, frankly, if you had money to hire a lawyer, you could probably have a lawyer come in and do some sort of injunction to get somebody in there to fix it right away. I mean, these things are emergency in nature. If your heater breaks at home, you call somebody
exactly,
and your heat's up
you
in 2 hours.
Whatever, right,
that's
you have
right.
to pay whatever you pay.
So this
if
is
I was an apartment, it would be different, but no, it's a condo, so I'm kind of screwed, sort of.
Oh.
That's one of the things about living in a condo. You've got people who are not professional managers of
right.
property running
exactly.
the show, right? And so, and that doesn't always matter until it matters. And then you have someone who's, you know, and I'm sure.
So what would be in the bylaws? What would you look for in the bylaws?
You'd have to just go through the whole thing. I would read the whole thing carefully. And what does it say about your rights if you have a problem? You know, when can you withhold? I don't know if there's going to be anything in there specifically, but, you know,
okay.
if you want me to take a quick look at the law to see what the law is, I assume that you can do that and you can withhold. But the bylaws are going to dictate first.
Okay, that's what I want to make sure. All right, Karen, well,
good
thank
luck.
You. I appreciate you.
Okay.
Good luck, Kathy. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. That I well, if in a landlord situation or an apartment situation, it's completely different, correct?
That's correct.
And what's the law there? Because I know they, I see the billboards even. You have to keep a certain temperature at night and a certain temperature during the day.
Well, and the city of Chicago will even come in and fine landlords if they're not maintaining that proper temperature. But then you can withhold. If you can't withhold if there's, let's say there's a crack in your toilet, you can't withhold rent for that. But it has to be something substantial which is affecting your life, like if there's a flood or a fire or something major that you can't occupy it. You basically are not allowed to live there. And I would say heat in the middle of the winter in Chicago is something that's very necessary. And that what you would, the safe thing to do is to escrow the money. You tell the landlord you're going to do it in writing. Okay. You're saying that this is, I'm going to fix it, or I'm going to, I need space heaters. It costs me X amount per month. I'm going to withhold and put it in the escrow account until we decide what happens.
All right. Well, good luck. That's, yeah, you definitely, especially now. For a while, a couple of weeks, it was like, oh, well, maybe you don't need that much heat. Well, you need the heat now.
Yep.
It's back. You sent along this story, and coincidentally, we just finished Florida news before you came in, and you sent me a legal legal story from Florida. I'm wondering what you think about this. As a Florida lawyer argued in a court case Wednesday that his client's car spontaneously burst into flames, his own pants caught fire in front of the jury. Stephen Gutierrez is the lawyer. He was fiddling in his pocket, and this is not me editorializing. This is actually from the story. Fiddling in his pocket when smoke started billowing and he had to rush out of the courtroom. That's a report from the Miami Herald. Jurors were then escorted out, and Gutierrez was returned unharmed with a burnt pocket. He was representing Claudie Charles, who was accused of intentionally setting his own car on fire. Even with the spontaneous combustion of Gutierrez's pants, and who hasn't had spontaneous combustion in their pants? That always happened in high school at the dances. That's why I had to stop slow dancing, Karen. Had a lot of complaints. Case ended with Charles being convicted of second-degree arson. All right. But Gutierrez insisted that the pants fire was not staged, was not a staged court demonstration. He said it was caused by a faulty e-cigarette. All right, Karen. You're an experienced trial lawyer.
Do you know what the word irony means? Irony? This is like irony.
Is it irony or is it a bald-faced liar, liar, pants on fire literal translation of that saying? Because really, you're trying a case for arson. You're fiddling around in your pants and suddenly your pants are on fire. And that was a coincidence?
It's so bizarre. If he did something like that, that would be such a breach of ethics to do that. And, you know, and not to mention, like, dangerous.
Yes, well, you're willing to put that area of your body on fire.
For your client, who's an arsonist, probably. I guess the jury decided that. It's just too weird. It's just really hard for me to believe that this happened. If it did, it's the most, you know, funny event. But, you know, I was just thinking to myself, is it possible that this defendant would have a right to appeal, saying that because his lawyer did that, or that
and
it happened, even if it happened, if it happened on purpose or not, that it was so distracting, and maybe the jurors became very distrustful of the lawyer, didn't believe anything he said.
Ah.
He was so lacking in credibility, because, you know, your lawyer speaks for you, and so when you have a lawyer who's a liar, you don't really, you know, it's not good for the jury pool, right? So maybe this is a means of appeal for the guy, but.
Have you seen, I'm sure not to this extent, but have you seen lawyers do some crazy antics that you went, come on, this is little above and beyond.
There's that old story about, you know, there was a murder trial and there's no body and, you know, John Smith is supposedly dead and gone. And all of a sudden the lawyer calls out John Smith and all the jurors look around to the back of the room. And the lawyer said, of course, see, you have a reasonable doubt if he's dead, too. Otherwise, you wouldn't have looked. So, you know, that's an old story.
Is that urban legend?
But lawyers do stuff like that, little demonstrations of what they're doing.
Would you ever set yourself on fire for a client?
Never.
All right. Just checking. So if at some point you're in court and something and you suddenly spontaneously combusted, it is not a trick. You are really on fire, and people should take that seriously. Perhaps throw a blanket over you or something.
Oh, my God.
Stop, drop, and roll, Karen, right in front of the judge. I was wondering.
I wouldn't want to ruin my outfit. I wear nice outfits.
Of course you do. You always come in here dressed, and it's radio. So I can only imagine when you're in court in front of people, you probably look, you know, very, very professional. So this is all about e-cigarettes. Don't have them. And don't fill up. Guys, here's a good. correct me if I'm wrong, perhaps in court it's different. I was told in business settings, you shouldn't have your hands in your pockets fiddling around with whatever's in there.
No.
If I'm a juror watching a guy playing pocket pool while he's trying to defend somebody, his credibility is going to drop a little bit.
I once saw a lawyer who couldn't stop doing it. He was just always doing that. And it was so distracting. A federal judge held him in contempt. The federal judge was a little crazy, too. But he said, you do that one more time, mister. And he did it again. And he held
really?
Him in contempt. I think he fined him.
Oh, my God.
But it is annoying when someone's jingling their coins.
Yeah.
It's a nervous habit, but you're not aware of it until you're watching it on somebody else.
Oh. All right. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti is here. She is answering your legal questions now, so get them in. But, of course, unlike Kathy, who called in when she was told, she called in very early. She was very responsible. People will wait, and then they'll say, oh, Karen's gone. How did they get a hold of you during the week?
And Kathy was shivering, too. I could tell.
Yeah, well, sure. She's freezing. She's calling from an igloo.
That's right. You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
More with Karen on the other side, WGN.
Bring the messenger here with this hymn of the
And again, this is music from the Chancy Brothers and their new CD, Patriots and Immigrants, as we are getting in the Irish celebratory mood. Do you get all geezed up on St. Patrick's Day? You don't get geezed up. Did you go out reveling yesterday at the parade?
No, I didn't. No, that's not a crowd that I want to be around, other than to represent them after.
Yes. Did you get a lot of calls? Did you get a lot of calls and emails last night?
No.
Hey,
no,
I'm in the joint. Sure, I got arrested.
They're probably still in.
Oh, yeah, they're in the. Is there a drunk tank?
No, not a specific drunk tank.
I don't know.
I did have a cab driver tell me that a young girl got in the cab at 9:30 and was so drunk she was throwing up at 9:30.
A.M.?
Yeah.
Oh.
She came off the train, so she must have really started early.
Well, you're sure
so
you got a pregame.
That's not a crowd that I like. And it's not just young people, too.
No.
I see a lot of older people.
That's the thing.
You know, they're drinking for 12 hours. How do you do that?
I don't know.
And it's cold out, and gosh.
Yeah, back in the day, maybe, but... Even then.
Yeah, even then.
It was not pretty. It was, definitely not. So I don't know. But yeah, they were pre-gaming early and then they get on the train and they drink on the train. And these are people who, some of them, maybe one or two glasses of wine with dinner. Some of the older people and some of the young ones never drank, but this is, trust me, there's a lot of Irish people who don't drink at all.
Well, I know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Irish people who know how to handle their drinking.
And I just wonder, if you're Irish, do you like St. Patrick's Day, or do you find it offensive that people celebrate by getting so rip-roaring drunk that they can't even walk? There's something a little offensive about
it. As an Irishman, I enjoy St. Patrick's Day in certain environments. Small Irish pubs where people are just, having a nice time. The big parade crowds, I think it's horrible. All the gaudy green stuff that people put on, it's not Mardi Gras.
Right.
It's St. Patrick's Day.
I feel the same way about being Italian in that when I see these shows that glorify the mob, I just think that's just not what I want to be as an Italian. Yeah. Like, does that really, it's all interesting and the movies are great and they're fun and they're interesting, but it doesn't reflect well on Italians.
No. Maybe, listen, don't bring any court papers to Tony and Tina's wedding. I don't want any sort of, I don't want my portrayal of an Italian American to cause any sort of
litigation. I can't wait to go.
Litigation.
April 15th. I'm
going to
be there.
Is that where you're going?
I'm going to heckle you so bad.
Well, listen, do so at your own risk. You know my history of, my work history. And that's all I'll say.
That's all
there's no threat. I don't make threats, Karen. I don't make threats. I just follow through on promises. Tom is waiting. He is in Aurora. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
We're well, thanks. What's your question?
My question is, so if two 18-year-old kids are in the car, out of nowhere, some other kids come flying by, they park in front of them, jump out, bust the mirror in the car, start screaming at them and pounding on the vehicle, telling them that they stole their phone. They get scared. They take off. The other car chases them. The passenger calls the police. Where can we find you? We are being chased right now. They finally pull over. The police arrest the both of them, both vehicles, right? And then they give the one driver who took off for the fear of their life a reckless driving ticket. Does that sound right?
Oh, you're going to, there's going to be a defense that it was necessity, that this driver was afraid and thought, but I think it has to be more than just afraid. Was there a gun? I mean, getting in your car and driving away, You know, was that the only option you had, and was the only option to drive away at a fast and reckless speed? You know, like I said, if it's some sort of duress or some sort of necessity, that would be your defense to it. But, you know, it's going to be a fact issue. My guess is that that's going to be pled down to something less than reckless driving, perhaps maybe just a moving violation. Because reckless driving, you know, goes on your record and, okay. You know, and then your insurance goes up like crazy. And I don't know if it was a felony. Were they charged with a felony?
It was an ordinance violation.
Okay, so, but you should get a lawyer. You know, you should have your friends or your whoever they are get a lawyer, a person who knows how to deal with this, and hopefully negotiate it down to something that he or she can live with, and then maybe it'll be on supervision, and then it will go off the record at some point in time.
All right, good luck, Tom. Hope it works out.
Interesting.
That
they charge both parties, but I think that maybe they want to take a position that, you know, you had other options other than to get in your car and drive like a crazy person.
Yeah, because just driving away, and who knows what all the details are,
right.
But at first blush, you go, well, once you're in your car and driving away,
you're safe.
Right. You can just drive to somewhere safe. You don't have to drive like a lunatic.
Endangering other people because you're afraid that someone's going to pound on your car, that's not justified either.
Right.
I mean, if there's a gun, clearly that would make a different scenario.
But then still, once you're driving, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do in that situation. But
yeah.
It's,
well, and
it
they're
does
18
seem strange.
Years old, too.
Yeah.
So you have to, I mean, I would take that into account if I were the prosecutor, that these kids, you know, didn't know what they were supposed to do in the morning.
Right, and they panicked.
Yeah,
and, you know, if you're in that situation, you're probably going to panic. All right, we are going to take a quick break for the news, and then we will be back. Karen is answering your legal questions. I know you have some. It's been a wild weekend. 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of us. You can call, you can text, however you want to get your legal question in. We will answer it. And by we, I mean Karen here on WGN. All right, we talked about the president dismissing the U.S. attorneys. The other big thing that has come back to the forefront, President Trump had signed a new travel ban. This time, Iraq is not on the list. There were a lot of challenges to the last travel ban. One, because of the way it was rolled out. Two, there were a lot of legal questions that didn't seem to have been vetted before they released this thing. Now some states are saying, listen, Hawaii is one of them. Number of states trying to battle this ban again. Have you looked through this? Is it better legally? Not we'll leave ethics and morals and all that out. But just from a legal standpoint, is this new ban better? Does it fall more in line with the law, or is it just the same thing, only now we have six countries instead of seven?
It's better in that they do a good job of trying to justify why they're choosing these different countries. The problem with that is there was a law that was passed in the 60s that says that even when it comes to immigration, even when it comes to the president trying to protect our country, which he has an absolute right to do via executive order regarding immigration, you can't just say it's by nationality. Discrimination based upon nationality is illegal. Right. It's illegal in the workplace. You know, if I say, you know what, I like Hispanics, but I don't like Hispanics from Puerto Rico. You can't do that. You know, that's
right.
Discrimination. So it's the same when it comes to this. And just because he's the president, he's still obligated to follow the law when he does his executive orders. And the second problem is the religious aspect of it. You can't really unring the bell, because before this was enacted, the first one, Trump had gone on television and said, yeah, it's Muslim ban. I was trying to do a Muslim ban, but maybe we'll accept the Christians. You know, you can't do that.
Right.
And then he kind of backtracked and said, no, it's really just the people that we find to be a threat to our society.
The bad hombres.
But you can't discriminate based upon religion. The fact that the court has to go back and look at the intent of the legislators, or in this case, the president, that hasn't changed.
Okay.
You know, maybe he's now done it a little bit better and he's thought about it, and there's other stuff in the law that helps him. But if it's based upon the notion that we have to exclude certain religions, that's going to be stricken down too. My guess is that some courts are going to uphold it and some courts aren't, and it's going to be a matter of the U.S. Supreme Court deciding.
All right. So, again, the last one, there was all sorts of uproar, and lawyers were at all the airports. We haven't seen that yet, but now the new one is not going into effect until March 16th. Based on what you've read and the legalities of this new ban, do you foresee that kind of problem again, or because we have a little more advanced notice, things may go a little bit smoother as far as the logistics.
I think things are going to go more smoothly. I think it was so broad brush, the first one, that it encompassed people that probably even the administration didn't mean to include. Now they've carved out a few of those things that probably no one would argue shouldn't be on, in a law. But now I think there's probably also, you can't just pass a law. You have to have people who are going to enforce it uniformly. Mm-hmm. So now that we know, there's probably been meetings, I would hope, on how these immigration officials are going to actually enact carry out this ban. How are we going to treat people at the airports? What are we going to do? What kind of rights do we have to give them? Hopefully all these things are being spoken about so that there's not the chaos.
All right. We've got a text question. I was in an auto parts store and noticed a keychain-sized breathalyzer. If the police see that, can they presume you're drunk and be suspicious of you? So I guess, in other words, would that give them probable cause?
No, I don't think so. Like, so someone had a breathalyzer on his key ring?
Yeah, they sell them at the, according to this texter, sell them at the auto parts store. Little keychain size. So you could hang a little breathalyzer off your keychain, off your car keys. So if you're at the bar, you can check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Well, probable cause usually comes into play when the police stop you in the first place. Okay. So, and that's what happens when people have a light out. And they have probable cause. Hey, you get your light out. Then they smell your breath and then you're in trouble.
Right.
But the police probably wouldn't see that, in the car, right?
Yeah.
To stop them.
Now, they might see it as you're, even though I was going to say walking to the car or walking down the street.
Yeah, I would say that the law probably, and again, I'm going to make this up because I don't know if there's any case precedent on this, that the law would want to encourage people to have one of these things. Because the reason I would assume that you'd want one of these things is to make sure that if you had a couple beers that you're not over the limit,
then
you take a cab home, right?
Yes.
So this is a good thing for people to have, not a bad thing.
Right.
So I would imagine that to stop somebody based on that would be against the public policy and not appropriate.
Okay, very interesting, though. From the 513, I don't know where that is. My employer hired me to work local to my home. They are now making me work over 500 miles from home without any compensation. Is there anything I can do? My employer hired me to work local to my, so close to home. They're now sending this person 500 miles away from home without any compensation.
Like on a daily basis, I wonder? Or do they say, move, or either stay here, move, or commute? Employers can do almost anything, other than discriminate based upon nationality and race and gender and all those things. So, that's probably something that, an employer can definitely relocate you, can definitely tell you that, you have to go certain places and go out to the suburbs even though you'd rather work in the city.
Right.
Can change the terms of your employment midstream, so I don't think there's anything wrong with this. Maybe they're trying to move him out, get him out.
And some places some companies pay for relocation fees, some companies don't.
And the company doesn't have to pay you to get to your job.
Right.
If you have to, if you have to travel during the course of your job, even then I would imagine, that would make sense that the employer has to pay for that. But to get to your job, the employer doesn't have to pay for that.
Mm-hmm. And again, we've discussed this many times, but I know Illinois is at will, which means, as you said, your employer can pretty much, within the law, they can let you go for any reason. It doesn't have to be fair. As long as it's not discriminatory. You work at the will of your employer.
You absolutely do, and can make you go to put you on halftime if they want to. They can actually make you work overtime. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
An employer can make you work overtime as long as they pay you appropriately, time and a half.
Okay. So I think when you put it that way, people go, they can't make me. But everybody knows at their job, the boss will go, hey, we need you to work. They may say it a little nicer, but
But if you refuse and I need you to work overtime, I can fire you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not fair. I still work, man. Too bad.
Yeah.
Nothing's fair. There's nothing fair anymore. Any other big legal news that has come across your plate this week or in the last? Oh, we were here last week.
Yeah. I
forget when we're together anymore, Carrie.
I was kind of consumed with this whole attorney general or the U.S. attorney situation, but.
And are the U.S. attorneys, those are the only ones that are administration based? I mean, once everybody under those people are I guess civil servants. So they're they don't serve at the will of the president, where he can ask the U.S. attorneys to resign, but he can't ask, as you said here, there's like 300 people under the U.S. attorney.
Right.
The president doesn't control all those jobs, correct?
No, right. So, no, those people's jobs are intact. And normally what's going to happen is there's a, the first person in command, there's usually a second person in command, and that person is probably going to step up in all these different jurisdictions and run the office until there's nominations and Senate confirmation hearings and the like.
Okay. And I know this is a very naive Pollyanna kind of question. But if the law is the law, what does it matter what party you're with? Because the law,
right?
The law is blind. Justice is blind. If I'm a U.S. attorney, I'm here to uphold the law of the United States, not the law of the Democrats or the law of the Republicans. I'm an attorney. This is what I do. And I know it's political appointments, but it's not like the Senate or the Supreme Court, or the Supreme Court rather, where these people are in for life. U.S. attorneys can come and go. Right. I don't get it.
I mean, U.S. attorneys prosecute bad people.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. If someone is a gang member, it's not like a Democrat, because a Democrat is liberal, is going to say, oh, let's not prosecute him. He only killed five people. No, that's not how it works. Prosecutors are, I'm going to say, bad. You know what I mean? They have one mode, and that is prosecute and convict and throw in jail. That's
who
what
was
they
our
do.
Former U.S.
Patrick Fitzgerald. He was fabulous.
Yes,
he was from New York. I think he served like a record 10 years. He was anti-political. He prosecuted the Ryans.
Everybody.
He prosecuted the Democrats. He prosecuted everybody. He was an equal opportunity prosecutor and a very good one. And things got accomplished under his command.
And I go back to this, that, from a common sense standpoint, then it shouldn't make sense. I know every president has done it, so we're not singling out President Trump, except that it's happening now during his administration, too, and we're hyper-vigilant of everything that's been going on lately. It would seem like that would be low on any president's priority. You've got people in place who are doing the job. They're not, as you said, they're not prosecuting based on any political whim, so what's the impetus to even replace them at all?
Well, I read
something. Is it a vanity project?
I read something, and I hope it's not true, but apparently, this happened on Friday morning.
Yeah.
Apparently on Thursday night, Sean Hannity said something like, Trump should just fire all of those U.S. attorneys and start new. And then Friday morning it happened. Now, again, I don't know.
Yeah,
I hope that's not the case.
I do, too.
But because that makes no sense. But it does seem, like you said, it's impetuous. I said that word wrong.
Impetuous.
Impetuous.
But I like impetuous.
That's like a mixed.
It's like you had a little, like your dentures slipped, and you don't even wear dentures. Impetuous.
That's impetuous.
Impetuous.
Impetuous. And yeah, it just seems like there's no good reason for it. You're right.
All right. Well, I just wondered, because being an attorney, I figured you had.
But listen, Trump has come in, and his whole theme is we're doing things differently.
Right.
I'm not a politician. I'm a businessman.
Right.
We're going to turn this place over. We're going to do everything differently, and I'm going to yank all the, executive orders from Obama, forget Obamacare, but on the other hand, as we said before,
sure,
you then have to have things in place that replace them in a way that makes sense.
Well, any businessman also comes in and evaluates the employees of his new company, and if they're doing their job, most times they stay.
Right.
And especially, as you mentioned, so, okay, the U.S. attorney is the boss. He's running the show in that district.
Yes.
He's got everybody under him. How hands-on are they in the actual prosecutions insofar as now that they're making all these U.S. attorneys resign, how does that affect prosecutions? Or is it their job to oversee everything and the people below them are actually doing, they're the worker bees, so things won't really change?
That's a good question. I think some U.S. attorneys are very actively involved in trying cases. Some of them will step in on heater cases where they really want to do it themselves and they want to set an example for their employees that they get their hands dirty and they get in the courtroom and they do what they need to do. A lot of lawyers in that position, they love trying cases.
Yeah.
They would miss it if they didn't have their hand in it. But generally speaking, their first priority is an administrator. And of course, because the attorney general, the sessions person, there's an agenda that they have. I mean, some years, you know, now terrorism is the number one priority of the U.S. Attorney's Office. It used to be other things. It used to be gang and guns, and which is still very, very top priority. But Social Security fraud is a big one. Real estate fraud, going after mortgage bankers and people, you know, all of those things have taken their turn.
Yeah.
And the whole country kind of is bound by what the U.S., what the Attorney General says should be the program. But, of course, each jurisdiction is different. Here in Chicago, we have a real problem with gangs and guns and violence. So, of course, that's going to be probably more important than it would be, say, in Minnesota or somewhere.
Right. Okay. Going back to the breathalyzer on the keychain, the texter sent something back to clarify. I was thinking that if you got pulled over for something and the police see a breathalyzer on your key ring, can they assume you're a drinker and request sobriety tests based on seeing that that you use a breathalyzer?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick by my answer, which would be no. And not to say that they wouldn't do it. Okay, so
right.
So if a police officer says, hey, buddy, you got a breathalyzer, you must have a little bit of a problem, and then you blow and then you get convicted, could you appeal based upon lack of probable cause? Mm-hmm. And as a defense lawyer in that situation, I would step in and say that wasn't probable cause. Just because someone has a breathalyzer in their car does not mean you have a right to take, you know, unless you smelled alcohol or you had red eyes.
Sure.
Had all those
he's
other telltale signs. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Anything.
No, I think that would be against public policy.
All right. Karen Conti is here for a few more minutes. 312-981-7200. That's how you get your legal questions answered. Text them, call either way. But in case you are without a phone or without any form of communication, you can get a hold of Karen during the week. How?
You can call me at 312-332-7800. Or email me. That's always better because you can give me all the facts. K Conti, that's KConti, at kcontilaw.com.
More with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. All right. Karen Conti is here. I'm here. You're here. 312-981-7200. Again, I want to thank the Chancey Brothers, their new CD, Patriots and Immigrants, as you get ready to celebrate the real St. Patrick's Day, which is on Friday, not Amateur Night, which was last night, to all the pretenders. But I hope everyone had fun and was safe. All right, we have talked about a myriad of topics, Karen, when in our time together. A lot of wills, a lot of child support, a lot of all kinds of things. Never have we covered a topic quite like the one that Tony has. He has not so much a question, but a legal tale that he wanted to share with us. Hi, Tony. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, guys. I like your segment.
Thank you. So what's your story?
Well, I made a friend online, lived out of the country, lived in Australia, turned sexual, decided she was going to come pay me a visit for a week or two, and said she had a hard time saving money herself, so she was going to send money to me. So opened up a PayPal account. She started sending money. And after many months, she decided it wasn't going to happen, that she, you know, was falling in love with somebody else, so she wasn't going to come out. I'm like, okay, fine. So I send her the money back. But because of the conversion rate, she doesn't get back the same amount that she thinks that she's given me, and she's asking for more. And I said, you just don't understand. You've gotten all the money you're going to get. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Well, she didn't like my answer, and she contacted my family on Facebook and sent them pictures and copies of emails and things through Messenger, and pretty much ruined my life.
Oh, she sent adult pictures?
She shared with them all the things she and I had been sharing with each other.
Oh, my.
1 week before Christmas this year.
Oh, that's terrible. Now,
yeah, it was pretty bad.
So what'd you do?
Well, her next threat was, hey, I'm going to contact the company you work for. I'm going to let your bosses know what kind of a guy you are. And I reached out to the FBI, and the FBI does not handle something like that directly, but they've got organizations they work with. So I was supplied information, gave them everything I could think of. They never got back in touch with me. I didn't want to stop there. I then went to the local police. Actually, I did them before the FBI. They said, look, what do you want us to do? We can't do anything. But I was able to contact law enforcement in Australia in the area she lived in. They also don't deal with it directly, but they have an organization they turned me on to. I gave them details and PayPal receipts and all the stuff they would need. And they were able to get her to come down to the police station, explain to her that she was breaking the law, and if she didn't delete all my personal contact information and all the photos and everything right there in front of them, that she was going to be in even worse trouble. And if they ever found out that that she'd been in contact with me again, they were going to continue the investigation. So they were able to get it to stop. It was too late. I've got a family that doesn't think very much of me, but it happened to me.
Wow. That's really interesting. You know, I've heard different aspects of similar stories where people, you know, a lot of it happens when you're dealing with someone on the internet, maybe on a business deal, and you don't really know who they are. Mm-hmm. They can say where they're from, and you have no idea. This person you probably knew at least, you know, her address or knew where she lived or maybe where she worked. But what happens is then the business deal goes bad, and then that person starts threatening. Now they go on Facebook, they find out who you are, they find out who your friends are, they may even friend you with another name that they make up, and they get to know everything about you, and then they start to hurt your business, and they start to hurt your relationships, and they do that. That's just what they do in order to either extort money or to get their way or just out of revenge.
Yeah.
And these people, I mean, I just wonder, because I've seen this happen, I'd say about 20 times, similar types of things. And this is, you know, not a romantic relationship necessarily, but these people can ruin your life. I mean, if they know where you are on the internet, you know, they can.
A lot of us have a lot of information out there. A lot of information. Well, Tony, thanks for sharing that. Hopefully it's a good lesson for people who, hopefully they don't end up in your situation, but if they do, there are ways to make this stop.
That's what I wanted to say.
It can happen to men, and it's hard to take care of, but, you know, don't give up. Dig in. Make it right.
Right, and I hope your family, I think your family is going to, you know, forgive you or whatever. It's hard to unring that bell, though. I understand that.
Yeah. It'll take some time. I was wrong. I did something that I really shouldn't have done, and I'd love to go back. But, yeah, going forward, let's just everybody use your heads a little bit more.
Yep. There you go. Tony, thanks for sharing your story. Appreciate it. We've got like 1 minute.
Okay.
Nancy, real quick, what's your question for Karen?
Okay, Karen, real quick. I'm a caregiver. And I got sick, and my company fired me for being sick.
Okay, so how are you sick? What kind of sick were you? Like cancer sick, or were you sick just temporarily sick?
No, I was just having all these really bad symptoms, and I was misdiagnosed and turned out to be a bleeding ulcer. You know, eventually I'm in the hospital.
Okay, so just generally speaking, an employer can fire you when you're sick. It's only when you have a disability under the American with Disabilities Act, something that actually affects one or more life activities. So if you have something like where you can't walk, or where you have dialysis, or something where this affects you in a way that's more than just a temporary illness, they can't fire you for that, but they can if it's just a temporary illness because they need to move on and hire someone else. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think that when you're ill, you're protected, and you really aren't.
Sorry, Nancy. Wish we could have giving you a better information.
Yeah, I mean, there's family medical leave. I should have added that.
Yeah.
If she was able to get, if that was in her policy handbook, and if there's enough employees, she might be entitled to some time off.
Right.
But then she would have to come back within that time period. They don't have to pay her when she's gone, but they have to accept her back when she comes back.
All right. Again, tell people how they can get a hold of you during the week.
Call me at 312-332-7800 or kcanti@kcantilaw.com.
All right. And we will see you not next week, but in 2 weeks. We will be all of them back together because the Blackhawks are playing next week. So
have a
wonderful couple weeks. We'll talk to you then. Let's do this. We'll come back and say goodbye. It's WGN.
Blackhawks and Wildcats games online, WGNradio.com.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the program. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. Just a programming note, I will be in Wednesday and Thursday for RoCon, so I hope you can join us then. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. The news is sponsored by VictoryAutoWreckers.com. 9 o'clock, Roger Badish.